Welcome to the Philacrosophy Podcast, where host and lacrosse expert Jamie Monroe will do what he does best, talk about lacrosse. Each episode will provide listeners with education, insights, stories, and lessons about the lacrosse world. We will discuss current events, coaching, philosophies, and college lacrosse recruiting. Now let's get started with your host, Jamie Monroe.
How's it going, everybody? Really excited to welcome Jess Hansen to the Philacrosophy Podcast. Jess is a certified mental performance consultant through the Association of Applied Sports Psych. She got her master's in sports and performance psychology from the University of Denver. Jess is also in the lacrosse world. She's the head coach of Cherry Creek High School. She's worked with the University of Denver women's program, played Division III lacrosse in college at George Fox University, and has a private practice where she mostly works with lacrosse players. And she works with a lot of JM3 athletes. Jess, really excited to have you on the show.
Me too. Thanks for having me, Jamie. I'm pumped for this.
So sports psychology, so important.
Yeah.
Everybody is putting so much time into their physical performance, whether it's their speed or their strength or their skills or their shooting, whatever it is that they have to get better at. And regardless if you're the best in the world or if you've got, you know, you're in a slump, everybody can use sports psychology. Can you just talk a little bit about the picture, about how you think about it and how you try to describe why it's so important for athletes and coaches to really have a grip on this?
Yeah. Well, I always like to say, almost all athletes and coaches will agree that the mental aspect of the game is such a big component of the game. Yet so many athletes don't spend time practicing it. So to your point, you spend so many hours out on the field training your physical skills. Why not train your mental skills too, if you know it's a really big component of it? I think so many athletes think of this as a field, like there has to be something wrong in order to work on your mental game, but I don't see it that way at all. Yes, that is a big side of it. If something's going wrong, if you feel like you're in your head a ton, we can address that. But also your mind can be something that's used to help you just be better in the big picture. And getting athletes to think about it that way is a really cool way to get them excited about being able to train this aspect of it, which is cool.
There's so many different aspects to sports psychology that we're going to sort of dive into.
Yeah.
But kicking it off, you talked about sort of this theoretical orientation to sports psych that is a sort of a 50,000 foot way of thinking about it. Let's start there.
Yeah. So in the world of psychology in general, there are so many different theories and types of therapy to back the foundation of how you work with just people in general. And within the field of sports psychology, it's important to have that as well. So what theories do you use to be able to look at the way humans are thinking and behaving? And two of the biggest theories within this world of types of therapy and stuff like that are acceptance and commitment therapy, which is called ACT, and also cognitive behavioral therapy, which is called CBT. And there are a ton of other different types of theories, but these are kind of the two big ones that a lot of therapists and sports psychologists and people in any sort of mental performance type of work like to pull from. The idea of acceptance and commitment therapy is a lot of the mindfulness stuff that we love to talk about. A lot of the being able to accept your emotions. We're not necessarily trying to change things, accept the ways that you're thinking, and then be able to commit to a type of behavior or action or way of thinking that you want to go from there. And so a lot of this mindfulness stuff. CBT, on the other hand, is kind of labeling your thoughts as maybe good or bad, unhelpful or helpful, and being able to change them. So not necessarily just accepting them and being mindful, but being able to say, this is not a helpful way that I'm thinking. We should change that the way we're doing this. And so I like to think about it, and this is just my personal theoretical orientation, but there are two sides of this. There is the during play on the field ways that you are thinking, and then there's this outside of play off the field ways that you are thinking and behaving. I like to use the ACT model for the on the field stuff. So the ability to be mindful, the ability to recognize how you're thinking and feeling, accept how you're thinking and feeling, but then be able to direct your attention to what's important, direct your attention to the present moment versus trying to change and work through your thoughts. I know we've talked about this a lot too, but there's this idea that athletes feel like they need to be feeling the best, feeling as good as they possibly can in order to play really well. I don't believe that's necessarily true. Of course, you don't want to be feeling absolutely terrible, but you don't need to be in this perfect world of feeling absolutely awesome about everything that you're doing in order to feel well. And so with ACT, when you're out on the field, if you get frustrated by a mistake, if you get frustrated by missing a shot, if you get frustrated because you're playing a really good team, accept your frustration, just acknowledge it. You don't need to shove it down, and then direct your focus to what's important. Your emotion is not important while you're playing. Your emotion and how you're feeling, it doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter. What's important is what you're doing.
You know, so often people, I think, confuse confidence with, you know, this theory, this ACT concept of accepting and committing to the fact that you may not feel great. You can feel very confident and get your ass.
Totally.
You can feel absolutely terrible, like I just so nervous, and then figure out how to gain focus and win a gold medal. And so I think this is something that's a little very interesting nuance between confidence and during play, acceptance and commitment theory.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's this idea too of like, you don't want to avoid how you're feeling either. You don't want to, if you're feeling super nervous, you don't want to just like shove it down and be like, it's fine, I'm not nervous. You want to address it. You want to acknowledge that you're nervous, but then acknowledge it in a way that you're not going to beat yourself up over it. You just are going to direct your focus to the present moment. And we can talk more about like making mistakes and stuff like that too. But one of my favorite things that I love to have athletes do, if they start to get frustrated on the field, if they start to get upset or whatever it is, acknowledge it. Like give, like let yourself tell yourself a sentence to just beat yourself up for a second. You can say like, just what the hell was that shot? That was the stupidest shot you could have taken. Just say it. Just get it off your chest a little bit so you're not shoving it down. And then from there, that's when it's important to look up and be like, what's important? What's happening right in front of me? That one shot that I just took, it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is what's happening right in front of me. And having some like physical and mental cues to do this is important too. So taking a long deep breath, thinking about your breath. One of my favorite things I like to have lacrosse athletes do is just like notice your stick in your hands, look down, feel how your stick feels in your hands, give it a little bit of squeeze. Or like an athlete that you actually know really well, she gets really worried about the people who are in the stands and what they're thinking of her. And so she has this light post across the other side of the field where her back is turned to where the stands are. And she looks up at that light post and just grounds herself for a second and just reminds herself, I'm here right now. And so again, this idea of ACT is address how you feel, but it also, it's not going to dictate what you're doing out on the field.
And the ability to acknowledge that things are happening. I mean, this is true, like, you know, all the time. I run into this. This is what mindfulness is really all about, is to be able to acknowledge that I have these feelings and almost like watch them drift on by while you put your focus on something else. I saw a really cool tweet the other day from Andrew Huberman, Huberman Lab podcast, where he talked about the power of this psychological sigh, where if you take a really, really deep breath through your nose and exhale through the mouth, literally it can calm you. When you start, that's why in yoga you focus on your breathing, is that you can't think about being pissed off, worried, scared, and focus on gripping your stick, or focus on that light post, or focusing on your breath, or focusing on the sounds of, you know, my daughter used to focus on the sounds of cleats on the ground. That's what she liked to do. I've actually practiced this too. Like when I've been playing 3-by goalie and I'm getting scored on and I'm getting frustrated, you know, that the defense isn't playing very well. If I just focus on sounds or something, I forget about that I was pissed off. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And that's what I think is important about the not labeling side of things. Cause if you notice that you're frustrated and then tell yourself, oh no, this is really bad, I'm frustrated right now, then you just enter the spiral of like, then you're frustrated that you're frustrated and you can't get yourself out of it.
Well, and also you've got this whole like, but I'm supposed to do positive self-talk.
Yeah.
Which I think sometimes ends up being like contradictory to what we're sort of, seems contradictory to what we're saying. Like you still want to have positive self-talk. You don't want to beat yourself up all day. But at the same time, you can't pretend something bad didn't just happen or something isn't great or that you feel this way, because you can't control how you feel, but you can control your focus.
Yeah. And that self-talk point is an interesting point too, because I think that's something that's just thrown around all the time. Like coaches love to say, have positive self-talk. And then athletes, when they start getting frustrated, they then in turn be like, it's okay, you're a great athlete, I know you can do this. But that just feels fake half the time.
Right.
And the other side of it too, I always like to ask athletes, when you're playing at your absolute best, think about the best game you've ever played. What were you thinking about? It's never positive self-talk. They're just playing. They're just thinking about what's happening in the present moment.
Totally.
And so why try to force yourself to tell yourself all these positive things when in reality, when you play your best, that's not what's going through your head. You're just present. And so I don't love the idea of, I mean, of course, again, positive self-talk is important, but while you're playing, there's no need to force yourself to tell yourself all these positive things. It's not helpful. I think it's distracting.
It's not a fake.
Yeah.
So acceptance and commitment therapy. And then you've got cognitive behavioral therapy. What is that?
So this is kind of different from ACT in the sense where it's okay to acknowledge your emotions as good or bad, or thoughts or behaviors as good or bad. And it's the idea of trying to change them. So instead of just acknowledging and then moving past, you are like, this is not a good thought that I'm having. How can I work through it in a different way, or rework it, or debunk it in a way that's going to make more sense? And the reason that I feel like this is a really important thing for athletes to do is so many athletes, they finish a game and they're like, that was the worst game I've ever played in my entire life, which is just not a true statement. Mm-hmm. And ACT would say, okay, just acknowledge that you feel that way, and then we're going to move forward. CBT would say, no, that's not a true statement. That's really unhelpful to think that way. How can we rework that? Mm-hmm. And that's why I feel like it's really important for athletes, because they have so many ridiculous thoughts all the time. They have thoughts like, oh my gosh, I just played the worst tournament ever. I'm never going to get recruited. That's not true. And, or if the recruitment process doesn't go well on September 1st, then they start to spiral that it's never going to happen, and they're going to become a failure, and their life is going to suck. And again, ACT says, accept it. We're just going to move past that. CBT would say, let's address the fact that these are really unhelpful things to think, and let's figure out what's causing these, and let's like face these fears. I always like to have athletes, if they're thinking stuff like this, be like, okay, well, what if? Like, what if that truly was the worst game of your entire life? What does that mean? And then it's typically like, it doesn't really matter. Like, in the grand scheme of things, you have so many games. Not every single game is going to be your worst game. You have to have one worst game of your life, I guess. And so knowing that, like, it's really not that big of a deal as it sometimes seems. Same with the recruitment stuff. They sometimes just spiral about that, and being able to get them to face it. It's important to work through that stuff.
Totally. And I think sometimes people will label a performance as terrible, and I'll be like, well, what, like, why do you think it was terrible? Like, I doubt it was terrible because you're a pretty good player. Like, I can't even imagine you being terrible. You just like not shoot well. Yeah. I missed like three shots. And, you know, sometimes like, you know, and I don't know where that fits in to this cognitive behavioral therapy, as far as even addressing what it even means to have a terrible performance, because you're just not always going to shoot well, and you might make some mistakes, and, you know, but there's so much more to it, as far as, you know, your communication, or how hard you played, or the thing, you know, there's a million things that you can do to impact a game.
Yeah.
And there's then on the flip side, some people might think they're just playing great because they, you know, scored three goals, but they didn't really take into consideration that they turned it over seven times, or that they didn't like ride hard, or whatever it is. And so how does that fit in, or does it not really fit in? Or is that where the coach kind of can come in to be able to sort of have some metrics of performance that you can sort of teach people about?
I feel like it fits in perfectly, because this is the evidence that needs to be reworked. Like, athletes have this evidence in their head. Like you said, they scored three goals, but they turned it over seven times. Athletes have this evidence that they scored three times, so therefore it was the best game they've ever had. But being able to work through that, because that's an unhelpful way of thinking. It's not helpful to think that you're playing really well when it's just based off stats and you didn't do anything else good. Mm-hmm. And being able to get them to work through that and say, okay, like, let's think of this big picture. What am I trying to work on here? What is my role within this team? Maybe it's not just scoring three goals. It is taking care of the ball too. It is being a good team player. It is setting other people up for success as well. And being able to, again, rework this and get them to think about it in a way that feels more helpful going forward, and can help them set, okay, this is not the helpful way of thinking. How can I turn this into goals going forward? How can I make sure that I'm thinking in a more helpful way going forward, so that my next game, I'm not just focused on scoring those three goals. I'm focused on taking care of the ball instead. And I think that coaches do play a big role in that as well, just by getting athletes to see the reality behind why they're playing. And then on the flip side too, when they feel like they're playing really bad, coaches need to remind their players of what they're doing well, not just the things that they need to improve on, so that they can see this more positive stuff going forward.
Yeah. And also to really have a true understanding of how much actually goes into a performance, you know, in a lacrosse game. There's so much more to it than the turnovers and the goals. Like you said, the stats. How about the attitude? You know, bringing positivity, you know, having a positive attitude, being a team player. How do you work with athletes on this topic? And frankly, parents on being able to stay positive in the face of maybe a disappointment or just being tired or, you know, any number of situations where people's negativity can take over, which then it brings everybody down. How does sports psych, you know, relate to athletes' mindset that way?
Yeah. Well, I do think on one hand, in a team sport, you have a responsibility to act in a way that is beneficial to the people around you. So if you, again, back to the point of how you feel, it shouldn't, if you feel super negative, whatever, you should be able to be present and be mindful and play through that. But you cannot let it take over to the point where you are stomping all over the field and slamming your stick on the ground when you miss a shot and taking it out on your teammates. I think athletes need to know that they have that responsibility to the people around them to be able to control that. No matter how they're feeling, you cannot show it that way. You cannot show your coaches you're feeling that way. If you're at a tournament and there are college coaches on the sideline, you cannot show those college coaches that you feel this way. So being able to internalize it in a way that it's like, okay, I'm not feeling great right now, but I cannot let that get beyond how I'm just feeling. I cannot start to express that. Is one of the most important things. And then again, the best way to be able to work through negativity or attitude and things like that is just to be present. It shouldn't matter if you're frustrated by things. It shouldn't matter if you feel like you're better than how you're playing or you're better than the team that you're playing against. You need to be able to focus on what you're doing.
With the concept of positive self-talk as can be kind of fake.
Yeah.
Comes down to feeling frustrated, pissed off, slighted, whatever it is. Sometimes I think you actually do have to fake that you don't feel that, so that the rest of the world doesn't see it. I mean, with the body language element of this, how do you sort of articulate that?
Yeah, I do believe that faking it till you make it can be super helpful on the field. If you are internally just so frustrated and upset by things, if you express positivity, even if you don't feel it inside, if you hype up your teammates, if you start to be more vocal and encouraging to other people, 99% of the time, you're going to end up feeling that way if you continue to fake it till you make it. And I always encourage athletes to do that too. If you show up at practice one day and you really don't want to be there, if you pretend like you want to be there, even if you don't feel that way, typically you finish the practice and you're like, okay, I feel like I wanted to be there by the end of it, which is interesting.
Yeah. It's true too, because if you go the other way, it's definitely going to go the other way.
For sure. Yeah. But I always encourage athletes when they are feeling any sort of negative emotions, pretend you're feeling the opposite of that and you're going to start to feel that way.
Parents need to do the same thing.
For sure.
Coaches need to do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that
I've been on the sideline and I've felt those things. I've been a parent and I've felt those things. But we cannot, I mean, we know this as a coach, you can't show signs of freaking out.
Yeah.
Parents can't either. You're kind of like in the same boat. You know, if you want to vent to your spouse, you can, but you know, even that to a certain degree can be, you know, detrimental, because you got to like move on. You got to like think about something else and accept where things are and be positive, because there's no other way to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your point too, as a coach, in terms of the like excitement about things, or sometimes you have those games that you just like know you're going to crush the other team. It's easy to not be, or you know, you're going to get crushed. It's easy to not be excited about that. But you know, if you show up to the field and you're like nonchalant about it and acting like it's not that big of a deal, the players will pick up on that and it starts to be contagious. And so as a coach too, having the responsibility to always be showing up, excited to be there, excited about the moments that you have coming up, that's such an important thing to be able to do as well.
Totally. All right, let's switch gears here. I want to talk a little bit about growth mindset. Such an interesting topic. It's not one that maybe would come to mind necessarily for everybody when you're thinking of sports psychology. But but it is so critical. So there are so many people that are just so rooted in what they do and what they believe and what they've always done that it just holds them back. How do you address this and how does it fit into the scope of sports psych?
Yeah. Well, I feel like growth mindset is one of those like hot terms that are just thrown around all the time and everyone talks about how important it is to have a growth mindset. And I think a lot of athletes are fooled into thinking they have a growth mindset because they're like, I want to get better. Therefore, I have a growth mindset, which is not, that is a part of what it is, but that's not the meaning behind it.
Right.
And so when working with athletes, I think about it in terms of mistakes. If you are comfortable making mistakes, if you are comfortable trying new things, that means that you have a growth mindset. If you make a mistake and know that you are going to learn from it versus that means that you're a bad player, that's a growth mindset. Making mistakes and then in turn thinking that you suck, that's a fixed mindset because you think that you're not getting anything out of it. Like we always talk about a pickup and stuff like that. Like this is the time to try new things and make a mistake. That's a growth mindset because that means you're doing things that are different and you're learning from those mistakes, which is huge.
Yeah. And I kind of think sometimes people like to equate their work ethic with, you know, I'm a worker, I'm good. Oh, really? That's awesome. What, like, tell me about how hard you work. Well, I do wall ball and shoot every single day and I sprint and run every single day. And then you try to get them to try something else, like come out and play three by with us or play pickup. They're like, no, I'm going to go shoot.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not willing to try other things. So they'll be like, well, I'm not going to, you know, a boy might be like, well, I'm not going to play lacrosse like with girls. I just want to play full go.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to play because there's like, you know, I'm a committed player and there's like eighth graders there or something. And not, first of all, it's partly the joy of the game that I think people sort of miss, but I think a lot of people love to just be like, I'm a hard worker. And they just love to just, you know, for like the people in the weight room, you know, all they do is lift and they're huge, but they're slow, you know, but they never actually work on their speed and they don't actually work on the other parts of their game. What are your thoughts on that as it relates to how do you help people with their growth mindset?
Yeah, that's such a solid point too, because that's a situation where those players think that they have a growth mindset because they're out there putting the work in, quote unquote, but not doing the things that'll help them get better. I think the biggest thing with athletes like that is just encouraging them that one, doing these things, and this is a lot of what you do, is like helping them see that hitting the wall every single day or shooting on an empty net is not making you better. These are the things that are going to help you be better. And so encouraging athletes that you need to be able to try these new things if you want to even start to expand the things that you do. And being so fixed in your ways of going out and hitting the wall or going hard in the weight room or whatever it may be is them just getting stuck in that same cycle. Because they're going to have coaches in the future. They're going to have college coaches who want them to do different things. And if that's not what they want to do, then that's not going to set them up for success in the long run.
So true.
Yeah. And also too, like say you might go to college and your coach wants you to play a different position than you've been used to playing. And you can't not agree with that. You can't have this fixed mindset and say, nope, this is what I've been doing forever. You need to be able to grow. And so being able to challenge yourself when you're younger to try these different things can set you up so much better for those things in the future too, where you might have different expectations on yourself that you're not used to. And you need to be comfortable in that.
There might not be anything more important for an athlete or a person, a human being, to be adaptive. And in order to be adaptive, you have to do different things. You know, we've been diving into this constraints-led approach, ecological dynamics, and all of these amazing sort of evidence-based theories on development. And I would say variability is probably the biggest thing that I've learned. I've been talking about it a lot on podcasts, and man, it's been incredible for the athletes we work with, and so much more fun to watch film on Zoom calls when we do so many different things. And I think that's the thing that people don't realize is just so important. If you're doing the same things over and over again, how are you actually getting better? And if you are, it's got to be just barely marginally better. Whereas if you do different stuff, that includes on the wall. I mean, it doesn't mean you can never do wall ball. It just means that you can't expect that you're going to become a great lacrosse player from throwing against the wall.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't just play, you know, it's funny. There's some people that are like three by purists.
Yeah.
Three by, that's it. 3x3, and it's like, it's almost like sacrilegious to like play different games with different goal sizes.
Yeah.
If you just play 3x, you know, it's fun and you'll get better, but you know, playing a 3-on-2 all the time isn't going to do it. And same with coaches. If you do the same drills all the time, are you really creating adaptive players? And what is a game like? How does doing the same thing every day translate into being adaptive in a game when you're going to face different defenses and different coverages and different actions and all of these things that are going to happen for you? So it's, you know, it kind of fits right into the CLA and all of these things, this concept of the growth mindset. And I'll tell you, I think parents really need to think through that too, because parents have an idea of how it should be. Like, I just want hard workers. I don't care. Just work hard.
Yeah.
Right. They're working hard. I feel really great how hard they work. But are we really working smart? And we all know hard work doesn't trump smart work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one, you know, sort of element to this that I just want to sort of bring up. And then the other one I just wanted to say is, I think that if people would just play more and think about their work as more like play, let's actually play more, which means games of different kinds. Could be small sided games, could be hoops, could be anything, but just playing is really kind of like one of the keys. And I think people get so fixed into their hard work mindset, they don't even want to play.
Yeah.
And they're even thinking about, like, in the middle of the season, they're thinking about how hard they're going to work this summer. I've seen that as a college coach, where it's like, they're you got kids already thinking about their schedule for how much they're going to lift and how hard they're going to work in the summer when we're in this down the stretch of the season.
Yeah.
Because they don't have, they're not in the moment, and they're so fixed on their fixed mindset, they can't even open themselves up.
Yeah. And again, that's just something that comes back to mindfulness too. And it's distracting them from the present moment, and they're not able to play at their best because they're worried about things in the future.
Mindfulness. It's, I read my daily stoic. I try to every day. You know, sometimes. Uh-huh. Switching gears. Let's talk a little bit about visualization.
Yeah.
Such an interesting concept. You hear these stories about, you know, prisoners of war.
Yeah.
That, you know, this one guy in particular in Vietnam, you know, was a pilot. I think he was a prisoner for several years, and he would play two rounds of 18 holes on his favorite course. Every day, he would play the entire round.
That's awesome.
He shot on the first to putt on the 18th. I don't know if it's true that he actually, like, got better at golf while he was, you know, visualizing it. But how powerful is visualization, and what are some of the things that you try to teach as it relates to that?
Yeah, it's extremely powerful, especially for the athletes who want it to be powerful. I think some athletes feel like there's some stigma around it, like it's some woo-woo thing that it's not reality, so why would it make sense? And sometimes athletes can get so stuck in that mindset where it ends up not being helpful. It's so important to talk them out of that mindset, but especially the athletes who believe that it can be something that's helpful and powerful, it can be amazing for them. One really cool way that I like to use visualization is with injured athletes and athletes who aren't able to play right now. So they, one, can feel connected to lacrosse still and feel like they can still get game-like reps in, helps build their confidence a ton. And it helps them really work through maybe some fears and things that revolve around their injury. So if they tore their ACL, being able to visualize moments when they maybe plant hard and face some contact and they're able to address it calmly and then know that their knee is still going to be intact through that and keep playing through it after that. So being able to use visualization as a tool to help build confidence and comfortability when it comes to injury can be a really cool way to use visualization. Using it to prepare for big events or prepare for games is something that's huge. And so athletes being able to put themselves on a field, put themselves in those games like situations to see that they know that they can be successful in those situations can be so powerful. Like one thing that I did with the University of Denver women's lacrosse team last spring is, I think it was still the Sweet 16 or something, so they're pretty far out, but I had them all close their eyes and imagine them winning the national championship. And I had them like work through the last few minutes of the game, work through the last few seconds of the game, and that those anxious feelings of what's going to happen at the very end of this and that final countdown in the last few seconds and them all storming the field. Cause there was a lot of self-doubt that was kind of revolved around that team. And a lot of like, I don't know, we've never gone this far. I don't know if we can actually do it. And so being able to get them to close their eyes and be like, let's watch it actually happen, was something that was so powerful to make them be like, we can go further than I think we can. And just really encourage and hype them up with that. Another really cool way to use visualization is like right before games. I have some athletes I work with that a lot of their belief on how the game is going to go is based off the first repetition of the game. So if their first rep goes well, they know the game's going to go well. And so what I have them do is visualize the first rep of the game right before the game starts. They close their eyes and they imagine the first rep, they imagine them score or whatever it is, so that they can be like, cool, we're starting off on a good foot here. Whole other side of it too is when they're wanting to work on new things or try things that they haven't done before, work with some more creativity that they haven't necessarily implemented in a game or even practice yet, being able to close your eyes and visualize yourself in those different situations and use your creativity. And again, just do those things that you know you've been trying to work on but have been having a hard time actually executing can be a really powerful thing. So many different ways to utilize it, and it can be such a powerful tool for athletes to do.
Very cool. I think I've mentioned Alex Sarama, mm-hmm. for basketball, transforming basketball. I've mentioned him tons of times on podcasts. And when I was preparing for this podcast, I texted him and I said, what's your take on visualization? He says, I love it, especially when used with an affordance based landscape, which is so interesting. So basically what he's saying is you can visualize the way you want to do a technique, such as like a free throw or something.
Mm-hmm.
But what he's talking about is visualization with the opportunities that are being afforded or offered to you. These affordances is a skill acquisition terminology for opportunities to act. So whatever your position is, if you can begin to imagine, you know, let's just say, you know, you're playing, you know, your team plays a lot of two-man game and someone's going to do a pass down, pick down for you. And you can imagine a defender going over that pick. They're going to go over it. And therefore, you're going to sell that you're going to use it and you're going to reject it. That type of visualization where you can actually work on the reads of the game or defensively, same thing. I mean, there's all kinds of reads where you might, you know, you might be in a fast break situation and you know, you know you have to stop the ball, but you want to practice hedging to it a little bit so you can make them make that pass and have to make an extra pass and buy time for your defense to get in. This type of visualization is very, very interesting, and it's endless because there are endless situations and you can literally work on situations in your head if you understand what they are and you can work on them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's one of the most powerful ways to use visualization too. And especially within lacrosse, there's so much creativity needed. And so being able to creatively use visualization in a way that's going to help you learn different aspects of the game and how to work with your defense or work with your attacker, it can be so incredibly powerful for athletes.
But I think a lot of people think of it as like visualizing a technique. Really, it's more like visualizing the coverage or visualizing, although, you know, visualizing anything is probably good. And like you said, visualizing success. Andrew Huberman, you know what he talks about? It's really interesting. He talks about the most powerful way to get yourself motivated if you're feeling unmotivated is to visualize ultimate failure.
Mm. Yeah.
Like visualize everything going to shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
and it's kind of it's the flip side of it, of a manifesting, so to speak, of all the good things you want to have happen. But if you're feeling not motivated or feeling like just in a slump, sometimes shocking your system, I guess, into like the realities of what could happen if you don't do the things you're supposed to do.
Yeah. I would almost argue for maybe younger athletes that would be unhelpful and unproductive because I feel like they're so emotional and so caught up in that stuff. If they imagine absolute failure, I could see them just being like, just having the shit scared out of them and then it not being motivating. Well,
Maybe an example with that would be if you just can't get yourself to study and you just imagine yourself like failing the test as opposed to like, you know, the complexities of lacrosse as a young age, you shouldn't even worry about it. You know, hopefully at that age, you're just having fun anyways.
True.
But the one thing about visualization though, is it's not easy to do.
Yeah.
It's hard to, it's some people really struggle actually visualizing things in their mind.
Yeah.
How do you sort of describe that and how do you try to help people with that?
Yeah. Well, practice is the biggest thing. It's something that if someone's trying to visualize for the first time, it almost never goes great because our brains get distracted by things. But truthfully, visualizing is a practice of mindfulness. And so I always remind athletes, like, you know that being mindful in the field is such an important component. This is just practicing mindfulness. You are practicing quieting your mind and focusing on something that you are trying to focus on. Good ways to practice it is just by like doing a simple task. So like I'm like watching myself pick my cup up right now and put it back down. And then you close your eyes and try to rerun through that thing. So trying to take away some of the creativity that you need with it and just practice very, very simple things. Or just imagine yourself standing on a field with your lacrosse stick in your hand, taking a deep breath. You don't need to like picture anything else. Just like put yourself on a field you're very familiar with. And so really simplifying it and starting it super, super, super small. Also visualizing things that had actually happened is a really big one. So if you have a game yesterday, like trying to work through specific moments of the game that you remember. And I always have athletes start with that. I almost always have them start with like things that have actually happened because it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
And then from there, you can start to add in some of that creativity piece. And starting with it small too. So starting with just like a 1v1 on the field, like you're not in a game situation. You're just out at practice. You're just doing a 1v1 because there's a lot less components to that. And then slowly implementing more and more into that is huge.
So true. Everybody can remember an amazing moment in their life that they've thought of. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I should say everybody, who knows, but you know, one thing that, I've been doing over the last couple of years, back to Andrew Huberman references, but is an SDR, non-sleep rest. I think we've chatted about this a little bit, but for people out there, it's a really powerful way to improve cognitive performance. To it's like taking a nap without actually sleeping. Usually, non-sleep deep rest is this. Relaxation technique where you kind of, there's a script that they take you through where you're really practicing mindfulness. You're practicing focusing on your senses. You might do a body scan. You might visualize a spotlight on your body. And then you try to sense what, you know, if there's, imagine there's a spotlight on your feet, and then sense what your feet are in contact with, and then sense what your feet, the bottoms of your feet are feeling. It might be listening to things, distant sounds, near closer sounds, learning how to control your mind to go from like one sound to another. And it's been a practice actually that's been really helpful for me, not only to like when I'm tired and I need and I want to like get an afternoon, instead of having an afternoon cup of coffee, I'll do a 10-minute NSDR. But also I think it's been really great for visualization and just the ability to quiet your mind and focus, as well as it really helps you get back to sleep. If you wake up in the middle of the night, you can learn how to do the same things.
Yeah. And there are so many guided visualizations out there too, which are really helpful. So it gives you very specific things to be thinking about. Again, especially when athletes are struggling with that creativity piece, being able to do something that's just guided and it works them through something specific can be helpful. I even do that in some sessions with athletes sometimes, is I literally talk them through a specific situation. If they're having a hard time visualizing it, I walk them through it so that they're able to feel like they're able to control what's happening. But yeah, I love the NSDR stuff.
All right. What are a couple other topics that you'd like to address, that you'd like to talk to your athletes about?
I think perfectionism is a really big one. And I think this growth mindset stuff ties into it a lot as well. But most competitive athletes nowadays are just extreme perfectionists, not necessarily because of the pressures of other people, but they just put so much pressure on themselves. They expect themselves to go out and play a perfect game. I always remind athletes that lacrosse is not a sport of perfection. If you want a sport of perfection, it's like gymnastics or something, that where you're given a score based off of how perfect you do, which is really tough to work with, like gymnastics or dancers or things like that. But within lacrosse, there are tons of different failures. And so being able to use that growth mindset to help with perfectionism, understanding that your mistakes are leading to something so much greater and it means that you're getting better, is huge. And being able to take some of that perfectionism away is really important, because especially from such a young age, athletes nowadays start to feel such pressures of that perfection that they just put on themselves. They expect so much out of themselves, which is not always attainable. Mm-hmm. like I always like to tell athletes, like your progression as an athlete is going to continue to get better. You're going to have little dips in this line though. You're going to be constantly going upwards, but you're going to have days that aren't going to be as good as others. That doesn't mean that the next day is going to be just as bad. That doesn't mean you're going to be on this downward slope of not improving. We have our off days sometimes. We have our off moments, and that's okay. That doesn't define how good of a player you are. That doesn't define how perfect of a player you are. No one's a perfect player. And so that's something that is very prevalent with a lot of athletes, is that perfectionism piece.
It kind of fits into the cognitive behavioral therapy concepts as well, right? As well as fear of failure.
Yeah. Yeah. And that fear of failure is another really big piece too. And something that's so important to work through with athletes. I always ask athletes, like, well, what would failure look like? What would happen? What does it mean? And it is scary. It is a really scary concept, but also understanding too that a lot of the athletes that we are lucky enough to work with, most of the time, this failure isn't something that is necessarily on the table. It depends how you look at it, and it depends what failure means to them. But being able to rework failure into something that it's okay to fail because you're going to learn from it. It's not this ultimate, you failed at literally everything that you possibly done.
So when you work with athletes, I'm sure this is the why you love doing it, but how important is it to create a relationship with them where there's trust and where you can get to know them and they get to know you, and where you can help them, but also maybe, you know, tell them a hard truth sometimes?
It's huge. And yeah, to your point, that is a big thing that I love about doing this, but I think there is such a stigma behind sports psychology and mental performance still. And when athletes are told they have to go talk to someone about their feelings around sport, they usually are like, what the heck? I don't want to talk about this. Or they feel like they're like going to hop on Zoom with some shrink old lady. And they're like, there's a stigma behind it. And so for me, building a really solid relationship, especially at the beginning, is huge. I want to be someone that they're excited to come talk to. I want to be someone where they're like, hell yeah, I got to go talk to Jess today and I got to vent about my problems or whatever it may be. Because again, I think that stigma piece is so solved by me being someone that they can trust and get excited to talk with. And it just makes it way more fun too. Like I can help athletes without getting to know them a ton, but that isn't fun for me either. That it's not very fun for them. And every athlete is so different. I think solutions to a lot of the problems athletes deal with, or ways that they can use their mind to help them be a better athlete, varies so much from athlete to athlete. And the work that I do isn't going to be helpful if I don't get to know them even beyond lacrosse, which is a big part of it.
Mm-hmm. And how about, a little bit of the work that you do to educate parents? You've done a bunch of webinars for the parents of the Jam3 athletes we work with. Honestly, it's kind of like a webinar on all the topics that we've gone through: mindfulness, growth mindset, visualization, breathing, perfectionism, assertiveness, you know, identity in lacrosse, meaning like, you know, is your entire identity wrapped into your, you know, your status, confidence, yep, leadership. How are some of these interactions with parents, you think, impactful?
Yeah. Well, one piece is I think athletes love to know this stuff. They like to understand like where an athlete needs to be in terms of their emotion going into a game. And they like to know that that emotion doesn't matter as much if they're able to be mindful, but also being able to teach them helpful tools. Like, how do you handle a car ride home after a crappy game? How do you handle your athlete's emotions? How do you handle them just sending themselves into a spiral? Or how do you handle those pregame nerves that can feel so intense sometimes? And so being able to give them tangible tools of, these are helpful ways that you can talk with athletes. These are helpful ways that you can help motivate your athlete and have them have this growth mindset versus this fixed mindset. So those tools that parents can take with them and use to help parent a competitive athlete is crucial. Because I think it's really tough for parents sometimes to be able to parent these athletes that have such high expectations of themselves and have such high goals. So being able to give them things that they can do to continue to encourage them, and remind the parents too that it's not the end of the world if your athlete feels like they're having the worst day of their life or things like that. And just being able to give them the space to be able to have those athletes have those safe spaces to talk about these things that they're experiencing so that the parents can help them. It's huge. So again, like the tools aspect of things that parents can take with them, but then also parents just love to understand what's going on in their athletes' heads too.
For sure. And probably everybody needs to start practicing more mindfulness.
Absolutely. Parents, coaches, everyone.
Sure. Coaches, how do you think generally coaches feel about sports psychology? Because on the one hand, you would think, well, I want every resource available to my athletes that I can. And on the other hand, you know, I think they could worry that they could be undermined, and you have to find that balance between being a sounding board for someone that's got some frustrations and at the same time helping them work through them in a positive way. That's kind of where some of those, those hard truths might come into play, but at the same time, you know, building this level of trust with the athlete, but also, you know, in the team setting with the coaches.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've noticed that sports psychology is something that most coaches usually are like, yes, I love it. I think it's so important. But then when it comes to actually doing it, coaches don't want to take the time to do it. They don't actually think it's important enough to take time out of their practice time to focus on this stuff. I also think it's something that coaches do know a good amount of this stuff. Yeah. And so sometimes coaches think they can do it themselves. And sure, some of it they can, but I've run into that hiccup a lot where coaches are like, yes, I think it's super important. I'm just going to talk about this stuff with my athletes. And even for me as a coach, like this is what I do full time and I coach on the side. I have a really hard time implementing the sports psych stuff when I'm coaching because it's important to have those two separate roles.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a hard ass on the field. I expect a lot out of my athletes. And sometimes me trying to talk about mindfulness or regulating your emotions and things like that, athletes don't necessarily want to hear it from me, even though they know that this is what I do. It's so helpful to have that external person who.
Yeah, totally. Because they can't get over the emotion of whatever that result was, you know, which interrupts your ability to have that relationship with them.
Yeah. And so having those two separate people is crucial. And I always tell coaches that as well. I'm like, I am a coach, yet I think it's so helpful to have someone else who does this. I don't always try to do this for my athletes. I want them to be able to work with someone else because I do put pressure on them. There is that pressure that does realistically come from coaches, and it's hard to get rid of that in a sports psych setting.
I love it. Well, Jess, thanks for taking the time. This is such an important topic and everybody knows it. And I think this was a really fun conversation. If people want to reach out to you, what's your email? How can they get in touch with you?
My email is Jess Hanson, JessHanson@mentalperformanceconsultant@gmail.com. My website for my private practice is cognelite.net. So cogna as in cognition, cognitive elite.net. I'm on Instagram too, jess.cmpc, certified mental performance consultant. And I love to just connect with anyone to even just talk about this stuff. It's my biggest passion in life. I love to chat with other coaches about this stuff, other people who do what I do. It's my favorite thing ever.
Awesome. Well, Jess, have a great season in your first year at Cherry Creek High School. And we'll be seeing you out there on the floor playing pickup this winter. And thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Jamie. This is awesome.